there's also other echoes of tokens in the exhibition, and tokens or souvenirs in the form of the case just over there with the books, and another representation of that medallion with the fugitive man on its face. And we can see that taken up by Josiah Wedgwood, who mass manufactured ceramics, pottery for mass consumption, I guess you could say. And that same likeness appears on that little plate. All of the objects in that case were collected by Deanna, including a copy of A Key to Uncle Tom's Cabin. And I wonder, Deanna, if you can talk a little bit about that process of gathering these objects and what that research looks like for you.
Well, we have to remember that the show came into being during COVID. And so all of this material is bought online or sourced at with the occasional archival assistance of organizations that were open at the time. These are eBay finds. These are
auction finds
as well. And there are two, you know, I'm interested in not only the Wedgwood iteration, but I'm also interested in the reproduction of Uncle Tom dancing scene from the book that's reproduced on this plate. I have others at home, and I still can't quite figure out how one would actually present them in your home. I'm stuck with what to do with them, you know? So it's an interesting thing to consider why one would buy those. Put differently, my friend Rochelle Dickinson posed a really interesting question about why on earth would white settlers want to invest in this kind of commemoration, right? It's a really interesting question to be asking. What purpose do these plates serve? And then, of course, just the pure kitsch of Uncle Tom's Cabin in the center image in Dresden, Ontario, which, of course, is the site of the real Josiah Henson's settlement, the Dawn Settlement, which was one of the first Black settlements created in southern Ontario. Dresden also matters for the fact that it is a town that was segregated up until the early 1960s, and there was a lunch counter incident, much like on the American side, that brought to the forefront this very real racial segregation in Dresden, which then turned into some of the casework for an argument for Ontario's Human Rights Commission, or Human Rights Code. The other book in this that really kind of matters is a publication by Benjamin Drew. What matters is what this publication is the first it's a first edition publication of a book that is all oral histories of former slaves on Canadian soil. And so the page that we have open, of course, is a story of Dresden, formerly known as Dawn, and Sophia Pooley's testimony that we'll see later on as part of this publication as well. What's interesting about this, as far as the archive goes, is that this Black-authored, edited volume functions in African-American archives solely. It is not something you'll find in a white library system. It is something that is often classified just as Black archival material, and it functions in that way. Why this matters to me is because there is a documentation of cross-pollination or miscegenation between Indigenous and Black people through slavery, and it's a super important thing to talk about when we consider the segregation of archives, mainstream archives predominantly being white. You have to go to another institution to discover Indigenous archives. You have to go to another institution to find Black. And the problem of that separation is it doesn't allow for intersectional analysis. And so things like Indigenous enslavement of Black bodies is something that you would lose because Indigenous archives are not speaking to that because it's all focused on the relationship with white settlers. White people are very busy kind of just arguing that, you know, their sole responsibility is Indigenous people. We never had slavery. We never had Black people. And then, of course, Black archives does that very dirty work of kind of naming the horrors, right? But it's important to name that segregation of the archive.